This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
You know, Marilyn.
What is this about?
Death, sex, and money.
I don't know anything about death.
Do you know anything about money?
Not enough.
Sex?
Quite a bit.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
What poor unfortunate creature had to die?
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
Money?
And need to talk about more.
I'm pre-orgasmic.
Does that mean you're about to have one?
I'm John Cameron Mitchell, filling in for Anna Sale.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the marvelous Marilyn May.
I've known jazz cabaret mistress Marilyn May for only about 5 years. She's 91 years old, so I've known her for like 0.01% of her life. And while her home base is the suburbs of Kansas City, she's in New York a lot. She's still working. And I met up with her working at 54 Below, the iconic cabaret in Midtown Manhattan.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You'd be like heaven to touch, because I love you so much. At long last, I have arrived. And I thank God I'm alive.
Marilyn was there to perform a week-long run of shows, because even though it's been more than 50 years since she was nominated for a Best New Artist Grammy against Tom Jones, she's still going strong as a performer. For her birthday last year, she celebrated by debuting a show here in the city called 90 at Last.
And, you know, it really worked. We had full houses every
really?
Night.
You played the age card?
I think they're well, yeah.
And you
I just hate to play
it.
And they do show up. And I always wondered, are they showing up because they think the old girl's going to kick off any minute, or are they showing up because they like the songs?
But when I always say I'm going to work with you, you're like, hurry.
I know, and I do say that.
When I discovered you was in Provincetown, I came to see you.
Oh, what a wonderful day that I met you.
My friend said, just go see Marilyn May. Just, if you're feeling down, go see Marilyn May. And I really do go see you at weird transitions in my life where at the end of something, coming back to New York, you know, that weird feeling of coming home and you're like, oh God, my life. You know, I get that feeling a lot traveling around. You know, you and I
both
do
that. Do you feel
that
you have to start again or what?
It's just all the things I haven't thought about come back. And I'm like, and I come back to my rent-stabilized apartment and I go, oh, God, you know, I wish I could change the floor in here, but because it's rented, I can't. And, you know, it's just like you, as a performer, there's a temporariness about life.
But you're so successful in New York. You are so loved here.
I do feel loved. But as you know, we didn't necessarily chase money. We didn't necessarily chase fame.
We are now.
Well, now we have to, right? I got to make money for my mom who has Alzheimer's.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You got to make money to pay.
I'm subleasing an apartment here, which is very expensive, and worth every nickel, because I want to stay. I'm happier here.
I mean, you're 90 years old and working.
Mm-hmm. Like
hard,
crazy,
working crazy.
Yeah, and
you were just working from so young.
Yeah,
it's just part of your life.
Oh yeah, my mother played piano, and she named me Marilyn after Marilyn Miller, who was a big Broadway show star in her time, she decided, that I would be a singer. So when I was 9 years old, we entered amateur contests, and then. When I was 15, I would leave high school and walk down about two blocks to the streetcar in Des Moines, Iowa, and take the streetcar to my gig, a radio show called Marilyn Entertains on KRNT in Des Moines. And then when I was 16, I started working on Friday and Saturdays in a nightclub, but still going to high school.
Your dad and mom separated when you were about nine, right?
No, I was 11 or 12. I think I was 12.
And what was going through your mind? Did you take it in stride? Were you heartbroken?
My mother shared so much of what my dad was doing, which I think is a mistake. At the time, I didn't realize it was a mistake, but my dad just loved ladies.
That was his weakness.
Uh-huh. She found love letters from five different women at the same time. I mean, just crazy. And so she shared all that with me. And so
at that age,
yeah.
Which is a lot.
It was. She was strong and not easy.
No.
Not easy at
prickly
all.
Prickly sometimes.
Years and years ago when I was a little girl, in my teens, before I'd walk on, she'd say, "Now don't you let me down."
You fill it up with happiness. You fill my world with tingle and zing. Each morning it's spring, and I want to sing while...
Like Marilyn, I grew up in the heartland of the country, actually in Kansas for a few years. And as soon as I could, I made my way to New York. Not Marilyn, though. She's lived in Kansas City since she was in her 20s, when she was building her singing career, taking gigs at local nightclubs and radio stations in the Midwest. Then when she was in her late 30s, she was quote-unquote discovered in Kansas City by the TV host and composer Steve Allen. She ended up getting a record contract with RCA and later became a frequent guest on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
That was beautiful, that he.
It's wild. I mean, you were a friend of Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, she was a dear, dear buddy of mine. Where we had all of our conversations, we're in a dressing room now. It was always in dressing rooms.
Yeah.
We sat, when we were in the same town, we would always get together. And then, I'd go to her show or she'd come to mine. And after the show, we'd sit for 2 or 3 hours in the dressing room and talk. She was adorable.
And she called you the greatest white chick singer, didn't she?
Well, people, it's taken out of context.
How does she
Because
put
on
it?
A television show, they would say, "Who are your favorite singers?" And she said, "Well, I love Sassy, Sarah Vaughan, and Carmen, Carmen McRae. And then the greatest white singer is Marilyn." She would say that.
That's so special.
Yeah, it was very special. And then we wound up recording on either, I've got a picture of us on either side of a mic, which is, I cherish that. And
Step
to the Rear. Yeah, we were doing Step to the Rear.
Will everyone here kindly step to the notes from the noise, the men from the boys, the rose from the poison ivy back in the bush.
I wonder how, you decided to stay in Kansas City rather than move to the big cities.
Well, no, I married a guy from Kansas City.
Oh.
That was my second husband.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why I wound up in Kansas City with him.
Was there a moment where you're like, "Honey, we got to go to New York or L.A.?
No, isn't that a shame that there wasn't? I was just too busy making a living.
Yeah.
I just, you know, working, and we had a daughter, and I was working. I was singing with bands on the weekend and teaching. He was a dancer, and I taught the singing, and he taught to kids, you know, from 8 to 18. Mm-hmm. And we had dance recitals, and I had this darling baby that I was raising and working every
day. Your life was full. It was impossible.
Oh, just totally. And plus, he was an alcoholic, and that was all the bad stuff,
That'll take the wind out
too.
Of the sails,
yeah.
won't it?
There was bad stuff going on behind the scenes, you know.
Yeah. Were you a saver? Were you a helper?
But didn't I think I could make him quit drinking? Couldn't I just fix him?
Yeah. You know, I had an alcoholic boyfriend who passed away from it.
Oh, yeah. Well, my third husband then, pianist, same thing. He
really?
Passed away from it. Yeah.
Were all three husbands
all
alcoholics?
Of them.
Uh-huh. Gosh. Was it in your family?
No, not at all.
Isn't that weird? It wasn't in mine either. I was like, why am I so good at this or bad?
Did your dad drink?
No.
No, my mother or dad didn't at all.
When you had your guys that were charming and alcoholic, did you feel a challenge in tying them down or did you?
It was just fun to kiss and hug.
You were more in the moment. And you didn't expect much.
Very much so in the moment. We worked together. I always found talent, you know. And my first marriage was 1 year, and forget that. It was just fun and games because he was fun, and he was older than I, much older, 20 years older than I.
Oh, wow.
And whippy and sophisticated, and I was 19, and, you know, so that was fun for about a year. And then I went off to my career, you know. And
did you kick him to the curb, or was it an amicable party?
We just went away.
Reminds me of the Ethel Merman thing, her marriage to Ernest Borgnine.
What was it?
In her biography, there's a chapter that says, my marriage to Ernest Borgnine, and then you turn the page, it's blank, and then it's like chapter 10, the next...
Well, I can say that about the first one. The second one was this dancer. You know, we were creative together and making a living together. And so it was a production. Then the third one was there again, a great pianist. That's what my talent was, what drew me to him. And, you know, the same thing, his great talent, I loved him for that. And we had such great musical rapport.
You know, we both sometimes been attracted to maybe wonderful but wrong guys. Maybe not wrong as much as, you know, there's sometimes patterns of behavior. I get bored with people who haven't had problems sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that you learned from those experiences? I mean, were there men in your life that were like, okay, this is the kind of person I need and this is actually working? Did you get to a point?
I don't know. I would become obsessed.
Yeah.
I was kind of obsessed. Mm. And I was more obsessed with my last one. I was calling my meaningful love affair. See, by that time, I was in my early 50s, I guess.
What kind of guy
was
he?
About like you. He was a dog and just a doll. I mean, he was handsome and wonderful and funny.
Roguish.
And just awful. He was just bad. Both sides.
Right.
After I would perform, he was so in love with me after I'd perform. Mm. And then one time I said, do you love me or do you love Marilyn May? You know? And he said, well, how can I separate the two? Which kind of smart of him. That was smart. He was kind of smart. What goes up, I must come down. Spinning wheels, spinning all around. Talk about your troubles and you never, never learn. When the moment then we'll turn. What did he do? He owned clubs. He owned nightclubs. And he had a very sexy apartment down underneath the club. And it was a hideaway, you know, and we'd go there. And that was, but I'm sure he took, because he too was like my dad, maybe in that respect. And I would leave town and I knew he was with somebody, you know, I would find out, you know, just terrible, just terrible. So I think he was about a 10-year on and off in Kansas City, about a 10-year thing on and off. But I was just nuts. I don't know that I was so in love with him, but I was nuts about him.
Did you want a committed thing with him, or did were you? You knew it wasn't possible.
He proposed to me one time. He had done a terrible thing one weekend, and so now we're having dinner a week later. And he said, and he pulls out this beautiful ring and proposed to me. And I said, he said, now we won't say anything more about the past. This was his condition, right? When he's handing me the ring.
He was like paying you off?
Well, no, he was proposing and saying, you know, we won't talk about that anymore, you know. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. But of course, I can't keep my mouth shut, you know. So, but sometime I want to know about last weekend. Give me the ring. So now I put the ring on and I can't get it off. And I'm crying, you know, and it's a little too little for me. And I'm going crazy trying to take the ring off and crying in the restaurant, right? And it's so
why did you
beautiful.
Want to take it off?
Well, because he said, give me the ring, you know. He said, if we have to talk about last weekend, forget it, you know. Ooh. So I go to the ladies' room and get some water soap. And soap and get the ring off and say, here, you know.
Take so, back your mink.
Take back, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was something that was fiery, but it was never constant.
Yeah, it was very fiery. There's a song that I did called I Will Survive. And
disco song?
And yeah. We had broken up, and on this particular Carson show I was doing I Will Survive. And I called him and said, I'm on the Tonight Show. And I hadn't talked to him for a long, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months. And I said, I'm going to be on the Tonight Show and I'm doing a song especially for you. And I want you to be sure and tune in. And he said, you are? Well, he was, oh, well, I'm flattered. And I sang right directly into that camera, do you son of a bee.
I will survive.
I will survive and am. I am surviving.
If I had known for just 1 second you'd be back to bother me. Go on now, go. Walk out the door. Don't turn around now. You're not welcome at all. Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with goodbye? Did it get crumbled?
Hey everyone, this is Annabelle Bacon, and I'm one of the producers here at Death, Sex, and Money. So Marilyn May had a pretty epic way of getting over her meaningful love affair when it ended, but most of us don't get the chance to sing Gloria Gaynor songs to our exes on national television. So when that's not an option, how do you deal with heartbreak? That's the question we put to all of you a couple of years ago, and your answers turned into one of our all-time favorite episodes about breaking up.
How do you cut someone out of your life who is a part of you?
I feel like no one talks about this.
I called his mom, Mom.
And then one day he said he was leaving the band.
It really hurt, and I just never really got the closure that I wanted.
Breakups are personal.
Yep, we've all been there. To hear how other listeners got through it, just text the word breakup to the number 70101, and we'll send you a link to the show. And as long as you're listening back to other episodes, don't miss the one where John Cameron Mitchell was a guest. He told us more about his own experience of loving someone struggling with alcoholism.
I didn't have it in my family, but I realized I was good at taking care of and wanting to save. The problem with it was also that I never had to face my own problems that were very deep-seated, too, about intimacy and trust, because his problems were always seemed bigger.
It's a really good conversation. To hear it, just text the word John to 70101. On the next episode, the maternity leave lineup continues. Writers Damon Young and Kiese Lehman talk together about basketball, body image, and why earning more can feel like a blessing and a curse.
I definitely think about death more. I think about, like, just terrible calamities, disease. I think about that.
Since you start making money.
Since I start making money, since I have a family.
Since you have children, yeah.
I am, like, in a constant state of, like, perpetual state of just hoping bad shit doesn't happen.
Wow. I feel like I'm in a perpetual state of assuming it is gonna.
This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, here to tell you about a great mystery. That mystery is you. As the host of a podcast called Hidden Brain, I explore big questions about what it means to be human. Questions like, where do our emotions come from? Why do so many of us feel overwhelmed by modern life? How can we better understand the people around us? Discover your hidden brain. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
We have had a lot of exciting new things to share with you about the show recently, but this might be some of our biggest news yet. Death, Sex, and Money is officially going to be live in New York City at the Tribeca Festival on June 11th. And I want to personally invite you to the live taping we'll be doing with the legendary journalist Kara Swisher. If you know Kara's work, you know her ability to get people to tell her things is unmatched. And she does it in her signature, hard-charging way. She's not afraid of things getting a little combustible. I have a slightly different interview style, so we're going to talk about that and play around with that in experimental ways that I think will make this a special show unlike any of our other live shows up to this point. And it's not often that I get to do a live Death, Sex, and Money show in New York, so I really hope to see you there. Whether you're in the city, on the East Coast, or just been looking for a reason to visit New York City, come on June 11th for this show. You can get tickets now at tribecafilm.com/deathsexmoney. We are so excited to see you there.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm John Cameron Mitchell. When I first saw Marilyn May perform in Provincetown, Massachusetts, there were very few people in the audience. It was a converted, tiny movie theater, but she made it seem like it was the Copacabana. She gave her all. I was overwhelmed. That was about 5 or 6 years ago when her career was actually on the upswing in her late 80s. As musical tastes shifted in the 60s and 70s, Marilyn found her talents less in demand. You know, she always said she was born too late for jazz stardom because rock and roll supplanted it. But she says that through it all, her most loyal friends and fans were in the gay community.
You know, they're the ones that love the lyric, and they, I think, live it, and the sensitivity, and maybe because of what they had to endure or not.
Yeah.
But I think they live what I sing.
You can take any style and make it not just your own, but make it clear. And so when I go, I feel a kind of a catharsis. I let go. I'm always crying at your show and always feeling
better. Is
that
bad?
Good cry.
Good cry.
The sunburned hands I used to hold.
I mean, we've both seen a lot of people pass from AIDS. And
the 80s and 90s, just awful. Just awful. My precious pianist for 20 years, Mark Franklin, Mark was one of the early AIDS cases.
Very early.
And it was like losing my son, you know, because he joined me when he was 19. And we traveled extensively together and laughed. And his sense of humor, we laughed on planes. You know, we'd have food fights on planes. And then the attendant would come by and say, "Are you kids having a good time?" He put the whipped cream on my nose, and I would just not act like anything happened. And then I would crumble the crackers in his lap and, you know, that kind of stuff. We played, you know. So he was my child. And a terrible thing, for 20 years he was with me. And, it was terrible to lose him, just terrible.
Did he go
fast? He died at 39. Well, pneumonia, and, you know, it was just awful. And so I had so many friends, so many close, close friends that I lost. And just seemed to go on and on and on. Yes, I'll miss you. Oh, how I'll miss you when
had any major health issues?
No, I'd never been in a hospital until, for some reason, I got kidney stones, and then I went
to the
emergency, and then I got sepsis, and I went
from
in
the hospital.
And from the hospital, but 6 days in intensive care, and then maybe another week or so in the hospital. Then they said, "Well, you need rehab," you know. So I went to this home and I was doing rehab, and they said, "Well, don't you want to have lunch out in the dining room?" And I said, "Everybody's old out there," and they were younger than I.
Oh my God, I'm terrified of like being in the community of.
Well, my mother was in before that. My mother was in a nursing home for 4.5 years, so I spent every day that I could with her in the nursing home. So I'd had enough nursing homes, but you know, in the nursing homes, what is the wonderful part of it is that the music you can bring, and
they
identify
respond.
With music. It's a wonderful thing to be able to go into the nursing homes and sing, and reach them, and you do reach those who have not been reached. In any other way for that week or month or day, you know.
My mom is a little bit non-responsive sometimes now. She's happy, you know, she's very smiley, but, you know, it's hard to put some words together. But I would just sing, "Speed, Bonnie Boat, like a bird on the wing, on with the sailor's cry."
Would she join you singing?
Yes. And then she, with her little quavering voice, "Carry the lad that's born to be king over the sea to sky." And then she's right
Darling.
There. That's the last thing you forget is a song.
Yes. Isn't that interesting?
The faces of people you love and then the songs.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days and dark sacred nights. And I think to myself,
dealing with, you know, in my 50s, dealing with parents, like in a way who become your children at that time,
right.
You know, in their later years.
Right.
I tell you, it's as expensive as sending a kid to Harvard with no financial aid with
her
care right now. But she has great caregivers that she lives with, because we took her out of the retirement assisted living thing because it was just a bunch of people staring at a TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
My mom's health, physical health is pretty good, but it's, you know, the mind has changed. Do you have plans about, you know, when you later on?
I can't think about that.
Yeah. Do you know what environment you want to be in?
Do you know what you want to do?
So for myself, I don't know. Some of my friends think that we're going to pool our money together and buy a place and have, you know, our young friends take care of us.
But do you think they'll show up when you really need that?
Well, I like this idea of kind of getting a few friends of the same age and making plans to be in the same place. As you know,
see, I don't know very many people my age. That's the bad thing.
Yeah, that's the thing.
They've gone. The ones that would have done that are already gone.
Yeah. I mean, this is my dream thing. It's like to be in a kind of like bed and breakfast, you know, near the end.
And then do you want to be, how do you want to?
Oh, I don't care. I mean, I grew up Catholic. I like the idea of memorials, but funerals are so stupid. And the open casket, what the hell is that about?
Oh, no. We can't.
You know, cremation
oh,
seems
God, no.
fine.
Nobody knows how to put my lashes on. We can't do that.
I know. Those undertakers are not Broadway quality.
Mm-mm. One of my dearest friends, she was like my soul sister. We kind of looked alike. And her name was Betty Holloway. And she was a darling, darling woman. And so her sister knew how much that I loved her. And they wanted me to sing for the funeral. And I said, of course I would. But then she always wore lashes. And her sister called me and said, Marilyn, will you put her lashes on, because the
heterosexual undertakers just
didn't know how to do it. And I said, oh my gosh, honey, yes, of course I will. And I did.
Was that scary?
Well, just, you know, yeah, because I loved her so, you know, it was so difficult.
A lot of tears.
So I don't know, I don't know that I cried. I don't cry very much. I cried so much during my, you know, I think I'm out of that now.
You cried out?
Yeah, I think maybe.
All those men.
I laugh a lot now.
Yeah, we're still living. And we're well, gang. Still raising hell, gang, in my special way. So tune the grand up, dance your shoes off, strike the band up, crush the blues off. Hallelujah! It's the day!
That's singer Marilyn May. If you've never seen her perform, you're truly missing out. It was a life-changing experience, really, to discover her. Find her tour schedule at Marilyn May, that's May with an E, .com. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. The team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. Special thanks to Joanna Solitaroff and Stephanie Joyce for their help on this episode, and special thanks to 54 Below. You can find me, John Cameron Mitchell, in the new Hulu series, Shrill, and on stage around the country performing songs and stories of Hedwig in my Origin of Love tour. Plus, look out for my upcoming musical podcast series called Anthem, starring myself, Glenn Close, Cynthia Erivo, Patti LuPone, Dennis O'Hare, and the South African singer Nakane. And as always, you can find Death, Sex, and Money on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Death, Sex, Money.
You know, I've got 7 nights and then I'm out of a job this week.
Well, at least we're in the same tribe.
What is that? Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves?
Which one are you?
Yeah.
Good answer. If you were a thief, you'd be richer.
Right.
I'm John Cameron Mitchell, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title the Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now.